Hello and welcome to another edition of the End Zone Podcast. My name's Eric Jensen, and I'm back with Trey Watkins. Feels like we haven't talked in a while. Trey, how you doing?
Doing all right. Got to finish one more final tonight, and then I'll be done with school for the semester, which I'm happy about. But aside from that, I've been all right.
Nice. Yeah, I've got I had my second to last final today, so that was good. Went pretty well. So I passed my math requirements for graduation. So hopefully I'm out of here come May, and then end of the week I have a law exam. So next 2 days just gonna be kind of studying for that a little bit, taking the day off. I'm thinking about going to try to see the new Spider-Man movie on Thursday. So
really,
we'll see how that goes. And yeah, that's kind of what I'm thinking about right now. Got Utah State's got a big game against Weber State tomorrow night, so that's gonna kind of take up tomorrow night. But yeah, we will. It should be a good time. So Trey, week 15.
Yeah.
We're here. We're in the stretch run. About 4 weeks left here in the NHL regular season. And let me just tell you, Trey, I'm pretty excited. I thought this week, you know, the Sunday games didn't really, the early games were kind of blah. But, you know, we got some good games in the afternoon, and Monday Night Football was entertaining. And there was even some excitement with Sunday Night Football for a little while there in the first half. So I'm excited to talk about the week with you.
Yeah, hey, like you said, we're getting towards the stretch run. Lots of really important battles going on in terms of seeding, all the way to, you know, seeding for top spots in the conference, and even for the last spots in the playoff race in both conferences. So it should be a really, really fun month. Maybe month plus of football before the playoffs start. I'm excited, man.
Absolutely. All right. Let's start here by, we're going to go back to an old favorite of ours, first through third down. And then we're just going to preview about five or six games that are of playoff relevance. On here, I did not put the Titans, Trey, but we can talk about the Titans briefly if you want. I don't know why. I didn't watch the Titans this week on Game Pass, so I didn't have much to say. But we can definitely hit on them a little bit too. But let's start with Monday Night Football first down. I thought that was the, maybe not the game of the year overall, but definitely the best Monday Night Football game we've had this year.
I would have to look back on the schedule just to see if I want to verify that or not. But it was a good game. I will say that it was a good game.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Matthew Stafford's kind of return game puts up pretty good numbers, looks like he did at the first half of the season. And Kyler Murray keeping them in that game, really. They had some offensive struggles throughout, but were able to keep up in the third and fourth quarter when it really mattered. And but I don't know, what'd you think about that ending sequence? I was really confused why Kyler Murray did not spike that football.
I thought
they had a chance to run a better last play.
No, they did have a much better chance to much better chance to run a last play. And I think something that Brian Griese said on a Sports Center with Scott Van Pelt after the game is that maybe it was some that they just haven't practiced lately or something. Maybe they just haven't been all that crazy with this situational football in terms of practice lately. But even still, I mean, that's something, if you're a quarterback, let alone a quarterback, but as a player on the field in that situation, offensively, you have to know that you have to spike the ball, stop the clock so you can regroup with your coaches and look over and see what you can do and get you a better chance to at least maybe get yourself in a position to score. Now, I know, you know, their position on the field, it might have not mattered that much, but even still, you have to give yourself that chance, because if you don't, you're just setting yourself up for failure, and that's what the Cardinals did last night. So It was certainly a bizarre sequence from a young football team in a primetime environment, a juiced up environment there up in Phoenix. So, but they'll learn from that. They'll learn from that. They'll look at the tape. They'll learn from that, see what they need to do better if they're in that situation again. And we won't see that mistake again. I guarantee you that.
Yeah, they also just made some other pretty terrible mistakes on that drive. I mean, you look at the holding penalty. Kyler Murray has that great open field run. I thought that was one of his most explosive plays of the night, where he gets down almost to the Rams 30 while juking out a linebacker. And that play gets called back for offensive line holding. And suddenly you're back 10 more yards, 20 yards, basically. And then you have a false start penalty. I just thought they were really and that falls down to coaching, I think. We've been critical of Cliff Kingsbury in the past. I thought that they just weren't prepared for that end of game sequence. They didn't look like a well-disciplined football team. And I thought some of the clock management and areas where he decided to go for it down the stretch there were also a little bit odd. Now, that's not to say what we've said about Cliff Kingsbury in the past, but you know, these are issues that have really come up and they bit them in this game. And this was a game where the Cardinals, if they had won, could have really taken a stranglehold on the NFC. They would have clinched the first spot in the playoffs and in the entire league. You're muted.
Yeah. And I don't know. It was just a bizarre sequence that I just don't really understand how it could happen to an NFL team. Like, I don't think a team, let alone a bad NFL team, the Cardinals are a team that's fighting for the top seed in the conference. That just shouldn't happen at all. And you know, maybe that goes back to like what you said with Cliff Kingsbury and everything, but even still, that just shouldn't happen whatsoever at all. It's borderline incompetence for something like that to happen in such a crucial moment, in such a big game, and you know, in such a crazy environment. Like I said, maybe the environment just got up to Kyler and the rest of that offense and the rest of that staff, maybe just got them at their brains jumbled a little bit, but that just shouldn't happen whatsoever.
This was, I thought, a great example of what the Rams can be. The defense was stellar throughout the entire night. Aaron Donald with a huge game, 3 sacks, had a sack to start the game, had a sack to end the game. Von Miller looked good, especially in the run defense. I'm forgetting the corner. Who was the corner who played for Jalen Ramsey last night?
Was it Darius Williams?
Darius Williams. He was awesome. Played really well, made some big-time pass defenses down the stretch. And this was just what can happen when the Rams are clicking on all cylinders is they're so talented, and Odell Beckham gets in the mix and scores a touchdown. Other than that touchdown, though, everyone's freaking out, I know. But he was a little bit quiet, in my opinion. Could have seen more from Odell, but that touchdown was awesome. He carved up the corner. But I'll tell you who I'm impressed by in this offense every week, and I got to give you this comparison, Trey. I think Van Jefferson is new age DeSean Jackson.
I think they're two totally different players, but DeSean Jackson is a
but
real
are
deal.
They really? I feel I like Van Jefferson does the exact same thing DeSean Jackson does, but he doesn't injured.
That's broad. I think Van Jefferson's game is a little bit of a mix of him being a serviceable to nice deep threat and also a guy that can run decent routes and make some catches at the high point, high point the football and make some contested catches. I think that's not DeSean Jackson. DeSean Jackson is a straight line speed guy that can get down the field, take the top off defenses.
I don't know. If you've seen the past few weeks, I would define Van Jefferson as a straight line speed guy.
I don't think he's a straight line speed guy, Eric.
Huh. Interesting. Well, we'll just have to disagree on that one. But I thought he looked you know, other than those other than these deep shots the past few weeks, he hasn't really been involved in the offense, is what I mean to say, I guess. So he is their Deshaun Jackson, their deep threat. And
at this point, yeah, sure.
And he's, you know, done a good job of that. Cooper Kupp continues to play really, really well. But, I mean, Matthew Stafford, this was a game where a lot of people were crapping on Matthew Stafford going into this game, and rightfully so. But this was a game where he showed you, hey, listen, I know I have moments where I'm not great, but in a big moment when I need to show up, I can play like a top five NFL quarterback. And that's exactly what he did.
Yep. And like you said, rightfully so, he was getting a lot of criticism over the last couple of weeks because I believe it was over the past, 3 weeks to a month, the Rams have been playing against some pretty decent opponents. And in those games where the Rams have played against decent competition, overall their team hasn't looked good. But most importantly, Matthew Stafford hasn't looked good. In fact, he's looked borderline horrible in those games that he's played against decent competition. Probably most notably that game against the Packers where he was just struggling. And I know that Packers defense is good, but they didn't have their top corner that game, I don't believe. There were injuries all throughout that defense. So there was just no excuse for Matthew Stafford to be playing like that against the decent competition when the team needs him at the top of his game. So, but he went on the road in a juiced up environment against a really good Cardinals team, played well and got the win. So that just speaks about the rebound ability for Matthew Stafford, just to push, you know, all the bad performances in the past out of the way, stick his head down and play well when the team needs him to. And that's what he did last night against the Cardinals. And that's what the Rams will need him to be down the stretch, because, you know, not just for the rest of the regular season, but the Rams are going to be playing some really, really decent opponents. No matter, you know, their seeding, whether they miraculously come back to win the NFC West or they get maybe one of the top seeds, one of the top wild card spots in playoff seeding. So they're going to be playing some really, really decent opponents regardless. And they're going to need Matthew Stafford to be at the top of this game regardless. But last night was a good step, you know, in terms of changing the narrative around Matthew Stafford and the Rams not being able to play well against decent competition. And for their sake, I hope it continues, because if it can't, then their Super Bowl or bust season will end in disappointment. And that would be a shame. Real, real daggum shame.
Yeah, we'll just take a peek at the Rams' next game, the Seahawks. Seahawks took the Texans' defense, but the offense showed they had some life. The Russell Wilson deep shots were back. The running game got going. That's exactly what the Seattle Seahawks want to be. Can they do it against the Rams? I'm not convinced. I think that the Rams have a really nice matchup next week to continue to get back on track.
Seahawks are, you know, they roll off some wins recently, but they're still a bit of a broken team. That they're just way too volatile to trust at this point.
Yeah, but if the Seahawks were ever to win this game, I mean, look out. They're right in that kind of 7-seed NFC total mess mix where there's all these other kind of bad teams. They're the best out of all of them. I mean, we're talking about the Vikings, the Panthers, the Falcons, the Saints, like all these 6-win teams. Like the Seahawks, I think, are the best out of all of them. But they have to win this week to continue to be in that conversation.
Yeah, and that's an interesting point that you bring up, that the Seahawks are somehow still alive after going down to 3-8, I believe, after that Packers loss. I believe it was Russell Wilson's first game back from that finger injury. But that's a real nice point that you bring up, Seahawks being still squarely in the mix for a playoff spot. It's kind of crazy to think about, honestly.
Yeah. So we will see how that all goes. Okay, second down, Bucks, Bills. So I wanted to ask you this, Trey. I know that you probably watched this game. It was the national game on Sunday afternoon.
Yep.
Coming out of this game, how do you feel about the Buffalo Bills?
That's tough, because I'm still squarely on the sort of bandwagon that says that the Bills won't be able to really do anything unless they find some sort of balance in the run game. And that has to come, you know, from other than Josh Allen with quarterback design runs or if he scrambles out of the pocket, because it's going to be hard.
Does that have to happen, though? Because I feel like the times the running game has been most effective this year and the times the offense has had the most success, like during that second half, is when they're using Josh Allen's legs.
Well, yes, of course, but I don't think that's somewhat sustainable for two things. Number one, you don't want your quarterback to keep on taking these crazy hits like, you know, that Josh Allen might take when he's running the football. Doesn't matter how big he is, doesn't matter how strong he is, those hits will pile up, and you don't want that to happen to your franchise quarterback too quickly. Second, I don't think there's been any sort of example, you know, in recent memory with mobile quarterbacks where run games can be literally be carried by explosive running talents at quarterback, aside from the generational effect that Lamar Jackson has had. Honestly, I don't think there's been any other example in recent memory. I might be off by maybe one or two, maybe, but even still, that's just way too few examples to just, you know, ride behind the idea of having your running game centered around Josh Allen. Because first off, you need him. You need him in the passing game. That's the Bills literally are a passing offense. They're a passing team. That's what they are. Because they can't run the ball. They can't run it effectively. They can't be physical at the line of scrimmage and push teams down the field in a street fight. They have to throw the football a lot. And it's brought them success in the past. But this year, it's starting to come back to haunt them a little bit because teams just saying, hey, we're going to put some extra DBs on the field. We're going to, you know, hoard the back half of the defense with DBs. You're going to have to force us with the passing game, even with all our DBs on the field, you know, or force us to, or forward, you're going to have to run the football. If you can't run the football, you're going to have to throw the football. If you can't throw the football, then so be it. You know, we've beaten you. And so far this year, opposing teams have forced the Bills to throw the football when they can't really run the football. So, and that hasn't really panned out for them too well this season. So, I really just don't think the whole idea of throwing the success or the potential future success of your run game on the shoulders of your quarterback, you know, unless it's some generational talent or, you know, some examples that you can use that will help that, you know, I guess you could say compare the running game to like Lamar Jackson or anything, but Josh Allen isn't Lamar Jackson. He's not some sort of generational running back. So,
but I do, I think he is. I think he is if you look at, because early stage Cam Newton, you would have defined as a generation changing running quarterback, which he was. And I believe that's what Josh Allen is. Like, he runs the same way Cam ran. Like, he does have that capability. And when they use him, you see that. Now, you bring up fair points when you say, hey, you don't want to rely on that. Like, the Ravens don't want to have to rely on Lamar's legs. They don't want to have to do that. But you can. You can rely on Josh Allen to do that. And I think we've seen in the games where they've been most successful this year, the second half of this game, and the Saints game, most notably, we've seen them use Josh Allen's legs a lot. And I think if you're getting him like 100 yards a game, then you're going to be a much more successful offense than if you just try to run it with Devin Singletary and Zach Moss, because that's just clearly not working. That's my point. We don't have to spend too much more time on this, but that's just my point of view. Where I'm coming from is I do believe he's the kind of talent that can be put aside Lamar Jackson as being said, hey, this is a game-changing runner. Same can be said for Kyler Murray, in my opinion, as well.
See, and Kyler Murray, I think Kyler Murray slides into the generational running threat at quarterback. I think Kyler Murray slides into the generational threats. Or generational running backs at quarterback, along with Lamar Jackson and any other quarterbacks that I might have missed or not that are not coming off the top of my head. I don't think really that's Josh Allen, really. I think he's still a decent, or not even decent, I still think he's a really good running threat. But I just don't think he's generational to the point where, you know, you can just throw him behind and center a run game behind.
He's Cam Newton.
I don't think he is
Cam Newton. That I don't know how you don't see that when you watch him play. Like, he is early generation Cam Newton. Would you say Cam Newton was a generational runner? Because I would say he was.
Cam Newton was a runner with, he was a quarterback that really hadn't really, I don't think the league had really seen at all or in a long time, really. Big, what is Cam Newton? Like 6'4", 6'5". He was like 250 pounds. He was built like a linebacker and he could run. Maybe your average running back. He was a tank. He was literally a creative player that you make in Madden. I think that was the whole deal with Cam Newton. And I think that's what made him survive in his league so long, because his build was insanely physical, but he could also keep himself healthy and throw the ball down the field when he needed to. Now, Josh Allen, I don't think Josh Allen is really built like Cam Newton. I mean, he's tall, but he's not extremely bulky. But he's
He is. Have you ever seen Josh Allen?
Yes, I've seen Josh Allen.
Josh Allen is 6'5", 240.
That, I don't think that's a lean. That looks like a lean 240 to me. I think with Josh Allen is that
I don't understand. We have to move on here, but I don't understand how you watch him and say he's not a generational runner. I'm trying to pull up his rushing stats here right now.
I don't think he's a generational runner.
Rushing, here we go. Over 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years of his career, he has 2,000 rushing yards. He averages just about 650 running yards per year. That's pretty good.
I think you have to take into account that, for one, Josh Allen was literally the Bills abused Josh Allen's, mobility in his rookie game.
Okay, so they did. Does that mean he's not a good runner? Does that mean he's not a generational runner? I'm pulling up Lamar Jackson stats right now.
Oh, gosh.
I'm just telling you, dude. They're just not – I mean, they're not that far – they're really not that far off. I mean, Lamar's got great numbers just because they run him so much, and that's a critical part of the offense. But Lamar averages like 300 yards more than Josh Allen does. But that doesn't mean Josh Allen isn't still a game-changing runner. He is. And they've been most successful this year, if you look at their DVOA numbers, when he's run the football. That's all I'm saying.
Okay. I hear you, Eric.
All right. Let's move on. Cowboys defense awakens. I'm just going to make a statement. Micah Parsons is not just the defensive rookie of the year. He's the defensive player of the year. It's just that simple. He is the guy to dethrone Aaron Donald. And I know Aaron Donald just showed out in primetime, big time, but what Micah Parsons does in – look at that play where he almost intercepts the ball this weekend, where he starts 30 yards from the play, sprints downfield in coverage, and then almost comes up with an interception. He is spectacular. I just don't see any way he doesn't win the defensive player of the year award. He has been dominant every week, and forget the all-pro race, he's the all-pro at linebacker and at edge rusher. For all I'm concerned, he could get the all-pro in two defensive spots.
Yeah, it's been insane it's really been insane what he's been able to do this year. And I think the one thing that's really impressed me this year is that he wasn't really a full-time pass rusher coming into the draft. He was really an off-ball sort of linebacker that could run around and make plays in a run game and use his athleticism to make plays in coverage. But Dan Quinn, the Cowboys, they've sat him down and said, hey, we recognize your talents as a pass rusher, and we're going to stick you as a pass rusher, and you're going to dominate. And that's what he's done. His athleticism, really, I think his – there's just so many – things you have to love about his game, not just as a, you know, as a pass rusher, but just him, period. He's just a freak, man. He's literally a freak. And when you can describe a defensive player as a freak, then they're just dominant. I mean, there's just nothing else you could really say. I mean, what other defensive players do we call freaks in this league? Aaron Donald, right? Miles Garrett, right? I mean, is it crazy to, you know, say Michael Parsons is somewhere approaching that sort of stratosphere? Not career wise or all time wise. I'm speaking of just straight impact right now. I think it's safe to say Michael Parsons is maybe a football player that's as impactful with Miles Garrett, strictly, you know, from the edge spot as a pass rusher right now. Like I said, I'm gonna say it again. I'm not saying Michael Parsons can be compared to Aaron Donald and Miles Garrett all time. Those guys have been in the league for a respectable amount of time. They've done it. They've talked the talk. They've walked the walk. They've proven themselves, and they're going to be future Hall of Famers, no doubt about that. I think right now, though, Michael Parsons is having as much of an impact as a defensive player, as much of an impact as a defensive player as the likes of Aaron Donald and Miles Garrett. Am I crazy to think that? Because it seems like every time I watch him play, he's just there making some sort of crazy play, and it's consistent throughout the game. He doesn't disappear. He's just always around the football. So am I crazy to really say that he's, you know, maybe in the same stratosphere in terms of impact right now, in terms of maybe Aaron Donald and Miles Garrett?
No, and I think you can put him in the same career stratosphere as them too. I know you said that they've been there for years, but the way defense works in the NFL is offenses adjust. And if you're not that great a defensive player, then you kind of slow down a little bit. For example, look at Bradley Chubb. Started out his career as kind of a game wrecker. When he's been healthy and played, teams have started double teaming him. You know, he's become kind of less effective than he once was. You look at late stages Von Miller, that kind of happens too. I believe once you're a defender, once you get into the league and people find out you're good, if you can still be good after that's been figured out, we're at that point now where he's beating double teams. Yeah. And he's like
easily too.
He is in the stratosphere of Miles Garrett and Aaron Donald. Those three are the top three pass rushers in the NFL right now.
And it isn't crazy to say that, because, you know, like I said, every single week, it seems like he's making some sort of insane play as a pass rusher. You know, you can line him up outside. You can line him up inside. That's one of the crazy things about Michael Parsons, that when you think of you know, of an impactful pass rusher, you think of a guy as maybe a 4-3 defensive end that lines up outside the tackle, or a 3-4 outside linebacker, maybe that has a little two-point stance outside the tackle. Michael Parsons can line up as a 4-3 defensive end outside the tackle. He can line up as a 3-4 outside linebacker outside the tackle. He can line up as a 3-point stance, defensive end or interior defensive lineman. He can bully guards. I mean, he's just insane. He's insane. He's an insane defensive player. And so that's what's just so, you know, crazy to watch about this guy, is that he has so much versatility. He's so athletic. He's such a freak athletically. He's just a real, really, really good football player. And I think we just have to appreciate what he's doing, because, you know, he's only a rookie. And the real journey starts if he can really continue this level of play and become a really consistent, you know, game breaker. But right now, he's just killing teams every single week, and they just can't stop him.
Absolutely. All right, let's get to some of the games in week 15. I know that Trey has been lobbying for us to keep these shorter, so let's kind of go through these as quickly as we can. And then, for that matter, other people have been lobbying to keep these shorter. So we can kind of go through. Let's just knock the ones that we're not going to spend a lot of time on
okay.
out of the way first. And that one is Bengals Broncos.
Yep.
Tough loss for the Bengals last week. A lot of Bengals fans not happy with Zach Taylor's decision to take the ball out of Joe Burrow's hand in overtime. And I don't blame them. You probably should have let your borderline top 10 quarterback throw in overtime and try to go win the ball game, but you didn't. So here they are on the verge of missing the playoffs in a very real way if they don't win this game. Meanwhile, the Broncos are just for Broncos. I mean, they are not a bad team. I have said that all year, but they're not necessarily a good team either, Trey. And
they
I feel like this is a good litmus test. I know you're going to say I'm crazy, but I don't think they get blown out here. That's not something I see happening. I think the Broncos at least make this a tight game this week.
See, with the Bengals, you don't really know what you're going to get each and every week. You know, one week they can go on the road and blow out a team like the Ravens, you know, completely unexpected sort of stuff. And then they can just look like absolute crap against the 49ers at home, where the offense really can't get anything going until the fourth quarter and stuff just completely collapses for them in overtime. So, no, I won't call you crazy for saying the Broncos won't get blown out simply because the fact that the Bengals are such a roller coaster from week to week that it's just hard to gauge what they're going to be each and every week. But I will say this. I think the Bengals are much more talented than the Broncos. The Bengals are a good football team.
Well, and I don't know if I'd say that. The Broncos right now, by the numbers, have one of the best running back rooms in the NFL. They have found a formula that works, and that formula has been used Javonte Williams and Melvin Gordon. They have been tremendous through the past few weeks. And that's not to mention the incredible receiving talent the Broncos have. Just because Teddy Bridgewater doesn't use Cortland Sutton properly doesn't mean the Broncos lack talent offensively. Like, this is a team with Jerry Jeudy, Noah Fant, and Cortland Sutton. Like, those are three very good skill players. Like, I refuse to let you say they are not talented. They are very talented. They just don't have an offensive coordinator that is good, and they have a quarterback that is middling.
Maybe I should have worded that better. I do recognize Noah Fant, Jerry Jeudy, and Javonte Williams. I love those three guys. Love them, actually.
Melvin Gordon has been playing awesome, too, these past few weeks.
Yeah, like, it's awesome, just hard for him. It's hard for me to buy his stock sometimes, though, because Melvin Gordon in his career has had these weird stretches where he's played really good football, and then he's had
to stretch. Then just admit that this is one of those weird stretches and get on board.
Sure, I'll admit this one is good stretches. But I'll be a little bit careful in buying his stock as the season goes on, because sometimes he can have these stretches where he just looks really, really underwhelming. And in the future, just makes me real hesitant to, you know, buy in with him. But yeah, like you said, he's in one of those stretches right now where he's playing really good football, and the Broncos have a real good 1-2 stretch, or excuse me, not stretch, 1-2 punch at running back, which I really respect and I really appreciate that. But going back to what I said, I did word that wrong. The Broncos are talented. The Bengals are talented. I just think as a cohesive, cohesive football team, I think the Bengals are a better football team right now. Let me just say that. They're more consistent probably on the offensive side of the ball, and I think that's probably because of the two options at quarterback. Joey Burrow is much better quarterback than Teddy Bridgewater at this point. But defensively, the Bengals have had their weird stretches up and down play as well. But when that Bengals defense, you know, specifically that front seven, can play some good football, then that defense really can be somewhat surprising and somewhat surprisingly good, honestly. And that front four, that's the one thing. I don't think we talked, you know, a lot of people have talked enough about that Bengals front four this year. Trey Hendrickson has been really good. I think Larry Ogunjobi, I think from the limited times I've seen him, he's been good. So I think that Bengals front four, front seven, is putting some good work this year and probably needs some more recognition. But I like the Bengals more than the Broncos, though, right now. that's just no offense. I just like the Bengals more right the now, Broncos, despite their inconsistency.
If the Broncos ever were to win this game, they'd play the slumping Raiders next week.
Mm-hmm.
And then a game against the Chargers, who the Broncos have had the number of over the past few matchups, and who can defend Justin Herbert really well. We saw that earlier this season. If they win this game, they can easily get to 10 wins by the end of January, by the beginning of January. And then it really just comes down to a Chiefs matchup where you just hope the offense doesn't crumble again as it did. Yep. Because, you know, the defense showed up in that primetime game. The offense did not. So it'll be interesting to see. It's must win for the Broncos from here on out. But if they ever won this game, they should be talked about as a real playoff contender.
Yeah. Wholeheartedly agree.
But this is the test. The Raiders are not the test. You can't lose this game and then win to the Raiders. But as I said, and you called me crazy, and Donnie called me crazy, and everyone called me crazy, they're going to win 9 games, just like I told you. Because there are 4 games left, and they're likely going to go 2-2 and miss out on the playoffs. Because, like I said, they're not that bad, but they're not good enough. So, once again, this one, for some reason, Trey, I don't know if you could tell, but this bothers me that nobody believed me when I said that. But they are going to go 9-8, just like I told everyone the whole time. So I know I don't take victory laps on takes much, but if that ends, you'll never hear the end of it. I know how to properly diagnose for Broncos. I watch for Broncos. I'm a Broncos fan. I can properly diagnose the team.
All right.
Let's talk about another game.
The Seahawks Rams, man.
We already touched on that.
Oh, we sure did.
Packers, Ravens. Who knows if Lamar Jackson's healthy? If not, here's a hot take. Tyler Huntley looked pretty good.
He did.
He's looked very good in every start he has. You know, the Packers, there was that weird report that says Aaron Rodgers suffered a setback. Then he went on Pat McAfee's show and was like, yeah, it hurts, but I'll probably play. And so that's weird. And that whole injury is weird to me because, like, watching that Sunday, I couldn't tell Aaron Rodgers was hurt. Like, he looked fine. Like, I believe him, but maybe this injury doesn't really matter and he can – It'll be painful, and that's good on him for being a tough guy and toughing through it, but it's not affecting his play at all, if you know what I mean. Yeah. So I kind of like the Packers here, but if Jordan Love plays against Tyler Huntley, I like Tyler Huntley more, and I like the Ravens. But too early in the week to really tell between the two of these teams. We decided to record a little bit earlier this week. But yeah, that's what I think about this game. Not a ton more to add. If for the Ravens, it's wild, but the Ravens could straight up miss the playoffs.
It is.
Because that's a thing that could that is something that really could happen.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate because the Ravens, like the Titans, I think it was another team that's been extremely injury riddled this year, and they found a way to stay in the playoff race. The Ravens have been hurt all year. They lost Marcus Peters and J.K. Dobbins. I believe Gus Edwards too before the season even started. And then against the Steelers, they lost probably their best corner in Marlon Humphrey. I mean, they've just been hit completely killed with injuries all year, but they found a way to fight for the number one seed in the conference and even stay atop the division. So, but, you know, now with Lamar Jackson hurt, I know Tyler Huntley has looked good, in recent starts that he's had, but it's just hard to really buy some sort of stock with the Ravens when Lamar Jackson isn't playing, regardless of recent play from his from the backup. So it'll be interesting because, you know, it'll be really interesting. If the Ravens end up losing this game, you know, and if the Bengals win, the Ravens and Bengals are going to be tied in a neck-and-neck race for the AFC North crown until the end of the regular season, which will be prime elite football watching, by the way. But this is a game – I think this is a must-win game, excuse me, for the Ravens because, you know, if you know, maybe I can bring up the Bengals schedule right now because based on what I saw earlier before – the Ravens have an insanely difficult schedule for the rest of the season. So the Ravens have an insanely difficult schedule for the rest of the season. The Bengals for the rest of the season, they have the Broncos, they have the Ravens, of course, they have the Chiefs, and they have the Browns. So, okay, maybe the Bengals have an insanely difficult schedule for the rest of the season. Like the Bengals, you know, like the Ravens. The Ravens have the Packers, Bengals. They have the Rams, and they have the Steelers. They have the Packers on the road. They have the Rams on the road, and they have the they have the Rams and Steelers at home. So it'll be a weird sort of stretch for those two teams, especially the Ravens. But if the Ravens can – get a couple wins against those difficult teams that are on the schedule, and the Bengals can dip, then they'll be in good shape. But the other thing could happen. So you just have to monitor what they'll be doing down the stretch and see if they can bring home that AFC North crown.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, two huge games in the AFC. To finish off here, Chargers, Chiefs. The Chargers on a hot streak, taking care of some good teams with a big win against the Bengals and the Steelers in the past few weeks, a fluky kind of loss to the Broncos, and then they took care of business against the Chargers. Here you have a chance. You have a chance at home to beat the Kansas City Chiefs. And if you do that, you've swept the division series and you're likely going to win the division. This is for the AFC West, a huge game on Thursday Night Football. The Chiefs are playing their best defense of the year. The Chargers are playing their best offense. This is just set to be a great matchup of who's going to break first, the Chiefs defense or the Chargers offense. And it's a great chance for the Chiefs to play against a little bit of a weaker defense and maybe see if they can find their offensive legs a little bit more as they've been slowly but steadily improving a little bit each week on offense.
Yeah, and, you know, it's tough to call games of the year when they haven't even been played yet. But this game has real deal game of the year potential. You know, take the factors that you just talked about, Eric, and you just add in the tension of the stretch run, the playoff race. It's a prime time game. Both teams are really, really good. I mean, this has real deal, red hot fire game of the year potential. And I really just can't wait to watch it. Interesting thing you said about that Chiefs defense. We just didn't really expect the Chiefs defense to take the, or have the rebound like they've had because they were just so bad of a unit earlier on in the season. Like they were a horrible, horrible unit when it comes to keeping teams out of the end zone and keeping them from scoring points. But they just made an insanely, insanely good turnaround defensively. And just credit to Steve Spagnuolo, and the rest of that defensive staff for getting everything in order because this turnaround is just something none of us really expected. If we were thinking back to where the Chiefs were back in, October, when they were giving up 30 points a game, and it seems like they were just getting ran over every single week by opposing offenses. So kudos to them. They'll have a real nice test, another test against the Chargers offense, which is playing good football lately. It's just going to be such a good game. I really can't wait for this one.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it all plays out. This one's tough for me to pick because you want to say Mahomes, like trust Mahomes over all else, but that hasn't worked this year. And I've kept saying it. Sometimes it's just, I'm just telling you, like, sometimes it just, this feels like early career. Like, if you look at the early careers of like Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers, they aren't always on fire all the time. Sometimes the team around you has to carry you. And right now, that's what's happening with the Chiefs. And I think the Chargers are just playing better right now. But, man, I picked the Chargers at first. But I'm picking the Chiefs, but not because of Patrick Mahomes. I just want to make that clear. Not because of Patrick Mahomes. I think the Chiefs win this game because Steve Spagnuolo's defense has been incredible down the stretch. And I think he has a chance to limit Justin Herbert in this game because they've limited high-octane passing attacks before. This is not the same defense that the Chargers lit up in week three or whatever it was. Like, this is a different defense, a different kind of monster. And the Chiefs get the win here, I think. You are muted.
Jeez, that's embarrassing.
Yeah, I mean, it happens every week, Trey.
It does. It happens an embarrassingly amount of times. I will agree. I think the Chiefs end up getting the win. I think this is a game where you can gouge where a young team is in terms of their maturity and their ability to win these big games. I mean, the Chiefs went into Arrowhead and beat up on the Chiefs earlier on in the season. But like you said, this isn't the same Chiefs team from that time. They're much better defensively, much better defensively. And they're starting to find a little bit of their groove offensively. So, I think the Chiefs end up winning. I think it will be a close and thrilling game, honestly. It will be a SoFi Stadium, primetime sort of environment. I think it's just going to be a really good game. But like I said, I have the Chiefs winning this game.
Yeah, you know, I agree with you. I think that they take the win here. All right, Patriots. Colts.
Yes.
This is a toss-up to me.
It is.
Really is. I don't, you know, okay, we can all make our jokes about how Mac Jones only threw three times in Buffalo and, oh, yeah, this Femi, I like the game. Okay. Go against a team that has a tremendous running attack and a passing attack that has really looked better over the past few weeks, and a Carson Wentz who is playing his best football of the year in Indy. Ooh, I don't know, man. I kind of like the Colts in this one.
Yeah. The safest thing would probably be to choose the Colts, honestly, because while the Patriots are good, and yes, the Patriots are a good defensive football team that has an offense that doesn't ask the rookie quarterback to do too much, the run game's good. Josh McDaniels has put Mac Jones in a lot, and I mean a lot of positions to succeed this year by just taking, you know, the unnecessary things off his plate and giving him easy reads and throws. But this is on the road. This is a Saturday night football game. Where the Specs run, the Colts are fighting for their playoff lives. Their running game is tremendous. Jonathan Taylor is a top three running back in football. Carson Wentz is looking like his MVP self, or dang near close to it. And the Colts as a whole are finding their groove. Oh, and then I mentioned this game is on the road for the Patriots, man. I just can't go against the Colts in this. I just can't. I look at the record. The Patriots have been good. But the Colts have just way too many things going for them for this specific game. So I'm going to go with you. I'm going to ride with the Colts. But, and I will say this, if the Patriots and Mac Jones find a way to win this football game, then I'll be insanely impressed. Insanely impressed. And I think it's going to be a good game, too. Because if we look back in history, the Colts and Patriots have had so many, and I mean so many fun games at Lucas Oil Stadium. And this is where this game is going to be. And it's going to be in a tense environment, a tense time for both teams. Both teams are fighting for seeding and all that jazz. Eric, I think this might be one of the best games, if not the best game of the week, honestly. I know we talked about Chargers Chiefs, but this game with all that's riding on it and the history behind these two teams when they played against each other at Lucas Oil Stadium. Eric, this is going to be – I think this is going to be the game of the weekend, game of the week. I really think it is.
Yeah, I hope you're right on that one. It would be a lot of fun to see it go down that way. All right, Trey. Well, this has been a fun one.
Yes, sir.
Feel like next week we're both gonna be off school.
Yep.
I was thinking maybe I hunt down a guest next week.
Okay.
Maybe we do two episodes next week.
Okay.
And I was thinking over a break, why don't we do a lot of two episode weeks? You know?
Good.
While we get ready for the playoffs, and you know it's gonna be tough because they extended the regular season now, but I do think that as is tradition, we should do a crazy like 3-week show right before the playoffs where we do an AFC breakdown, an NFC breakdown, and a coaching changes show. Yep. I feel like we should do that. And then I feel like we should hit the playoffs and just ride this thing out to the Super Bowl. And then February, take our little break off like we normally do and get into free agency and draft season in March.
Yes, sir.
All right, buddy. Well, thanks for so much for joining me. Everybody, no problem. Thank you so much for listening. I haven't done this a ton recently, so I feel like we should. Follow this podcast on Twitter at EndZonePod. Follow Trey Watkins on Twitter at TreyWatkins099. Follow me on Twitter at Eric18Utah. Follow my Utah sports account at EricJensenSports. Yeah, that's kind of it. But go check us out for sure. And look for two episodes next week. Should be a lot of fun. Anyways, Trey, thanks so much for joining me. Good luck on the rest of your finals, and we'll see you next week. Trey?
Oh, yes, no. Sir. Okay. I didn't think you were looking for me in the outro, man.
Oh, I thought you might say something.
Yeah, everything that Eric said, I'll echo it. Follow us both on Twitter. Follow the End Zone Pod. Spread the pod, please. Please spread the pod. I mean, it doesn't matter if you listen or not, man. But if you're listening, please spread the pod. Give it a nice review on iTunes if you listen there. But most of all, just share the pod. Share it to your friends, your family, anybody you can share it with. And we'd be appreciative of that.
So I just had an idea, Trey. I'm not working Thursday night, and I don't have anything going on Friday afternoon. Maybe after the Chargers Chiefs game, we could do a little Twitter Spaces thing, recapping the game a little bit.
We'll have to see about that.
Okay.
We would just have to see about that though. But it's a good idea nonetheless.
All right. Well, maybe look for that too. All right. We will see you all next week. Thanks so much for joining us. Peace out.